It was a dark and evil place, needless to say, but it was really unreal.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Randy Dixon, who is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. I say with me. Randy's on the phone. How are you, sir?
Good, Kyle. How are you?
Hanging in there. Hanging in there. I want to, before we go into this week's trip through the Pryor Center archives, these are digitally remastered archives that have come out of the KATV library and live now on the Pryor Center's website. Before we do that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we did a segment that was kind of connected to infamous crimes in Arkansas's past. Last week, talked about the beginning of prison reform. This week, more about prison problems through Arkansas's history. A reason that you've taken this course over the last 3 weeks or month or so, or is it just happenstance?
It's just happened that way. I came across the Tom Merton material, and he was the guy right. that the movie Brubaker was based on. And there was just so much more to the story on the prison reform. So it all just kind of worked out that way. But I found a lot that didn't include Tom Merton that we can sort of back up a little bit and go beyond.
Okay.
That one less than a year period when all the scandal broke, because it built up to that and then continued after.
Well, what did we hear to begin this week's segment?
Well, that was retired Supreme Court Chief Justice Jack Holt, who he was describing the prison system as a dark and evil place, which is, he was quoting Judge J. Smith Henley when he ruled that the Arkansas prison system was unconstitutional. And the reason I talked to Jack Holt is that he was a young attorney who knew Judge Henley, and Judge Henley called him right before Christmas and said, "Do you know a young attorney named Phil Kaplan?" And he said, "No." He said, "Well, you're about to." Because he had the two of them take the pro bono case of the conditions of the prison system when they when it was found to be unconstitutional. So it starts off with Judge Holt as a young man in 1966 when he talks about the judge's ruling.
Well, I think the court in its previous opinions pretty well pointed out that we must have what we call a degree of constitutional standards, in other words, humane treatment. Humane treatment, you might say, paraphrasing, that the institution itself must not be a form of punishment, which we feel like in the past it has been due to the dismal conditions, the treatment, the forms of punishment. And, of course, any lawyer that's been in this for a while thinks perhaps he knows all the answers. He doesn't. We have our own impressions of what might work, what might not work, but I think we can say this in summary. We know that the system we have had in the past has not worked at all.
Prisons have always been a big part of the state of Arkansas's budget and have always kind of been there. And as we're going to find out this week, there have been significant problems with the Arkansas prison system over the past several decades.
Yes, and they were supposed to be self-contained units with farms and provide for themselves and make a profit some years. But the entire system was corrupt. It was deep-seated. There was violence. There was torture, lack of food. They had the inmates working 14-hour work days. And the worst part of it is they called it the trustee system. And you're familiar with that,
yes,
Kyle.
Yes.
But if for any of the listeners who aren't, there were no real guards. There were maybe only a couple or a handful. The rest were prisoners, and they called them trustees because they were trusted to carry a gun and watch the other prisoners. But I had the chance to talk to Jack Holt, and retired judge, was the attorney on the case, and he talks about the trustee system some 50 years later.
Penitentiary was run, in a sense, by other inmates, trustees. It was a trustee system. The trustees, the guards, most of the guards, the tower guards, were trustees. They were people who were confined, and they had to select someone with that would be inclined to shoot a fellow inmate if he tried to escape.
You also talked with Jim Pitcock, the longtime KATV news director and reporter, about this era. What did he have to say?
Well, he saw it as a flawed system, and he sort of describes the way the media saw it.
Most of the trustees were violent, and the reason they were trustees because the other inmates knew that they were in for a violent crime like murder or what have you, and they knew that they could get shot by a trustee for little or no apparent reason.
As one might suspect, these problems then boil over and become much bigger problems. There was a period in Arkansas where there were prison riots.
And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were getting rid of the trustee system. They were bringing in real guards. But when these trustees who had been sometimes brutally disciplining their fellow inmates are suddenly back in the barracks with them. And it caused problems. They were escaping on a regular basis. And it was just, I guess you could just call it a mess down there at Cummins and Tucker. And Jim Pitcock talks about one of these riots that really started bringing these problems to the media's attention.
We had what I call the Labor Day riot, when they had to call in about 100 state troopers over the Labor Day holiday. And I believe it was in, I think it was either 65 or 66. And they, at the time, they had the barracks type facility. There might be 100 inmates in a long barracks, and so they started rioting, and they called in all of the state troopers, and I don't remember if anyone was hurt, but we went. They let us in the next day, and at the time, Dan Stevens had been replaced as superintendent by the former sheriff of Union County down in El Dorado, a fellow by the name of O.E. Bishop. And I remember Mr. Bishop took us through the barracks, and there were bullet holes all along the ceiling where they had shot over the inmates to quell the disturbance. And that was really the beginning. That's when the major problems came to the forefront.
It's Jim Pitcock, who is a longtime news director and reporter at KATV. Yeah, the media does begin to seize on this, and I think a lot of people in the public were surprised at some of the policies that were going on in Arkansas prisons at this time. And now you have to do, I don't know if you'd call it spin, but there's some media relations that the correctional department tries.
Sure, and it was coming, they were pretty open about it. And this is an example. Jim was describing this Labor Day riot, and the superintendent at the time was a fellow by the name of O.E. Bishop, who had been the sheriff down in Union County. And Governor Faubus had asked him to sort of step in and be superintendent and warden. And so he's giving a tour of the area, the barracks, after this riot that Jim had described.
Just sort of explain how the bullet holes got in there. We're going to record
this. Well, we've already explained it. Well, you know, when the riot broke out in here, well, then I ordered to fire. When the gas didn't break them up and they had attacked the trustees, then I ordered to fire over the heads, which we'd already discussed. Of course, the first fire, well, they all hit the floor. Then the trustees were all out except one. He ran out.
And, as you might think, it's a pretty thankless job to be doing this. So O.E. Bishop decides he doesn't want to do it anymore.
Right, right. You know, it's like I did this because Faubus asked me to. I'm a sheriff. Nobody's given me any money or resources, support. So, yeah, he just up and quits.
I just felt like that it would be better that I resign and get out because I had reached the point where I could not operate or run the penitentiary like I thought it should be run.
And is this where Tom Merton, who Robert Redford was based on in the movie Brubaker, comes in?
Yes, and he really brought the media attention. A lot of folks, his critics, said he was showboating, you know, and pointing out too much. But he pointed out the strap, which was a form of beating, the Tucker telephone, which was a form of torture, using electric shock. And then he started digging up graves and claimed that they were inmates who had been murdered, and the Rockefeller administration was very embarrassed about this. And within 2 months after he had exhumed these bodies, he was fired. And as a matter of fact, he was told he had 24 hours to get out of the state or he would be arrested for grave robbing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, which is a charge that he could have gotten 21 years under state law. So he hightailed it. Mm. So in comes Bob Sarver, and he is wanting to bring much more change. And this is right after Judge Henley's ruling on the unconstitutionality of the prisons, and this is Bob Sarver's response.
It has slapped our hands rather hard, and one of the major items is that as a result of our inadequate free world security force, the lives and safety of the inmates in the institution is certainly in jeopardy. We've had, as the judge pointed out, 17 stabbings in the past 18 months at Cummins alone. We don't have free world men to guard. The judge has suggested in the order that free world people be hired or employed to replace the so-called floor walker who walks the floor in each of the 8 barracks at night to see to it that the men are sleeping or at least staying in their own bunk areas. At this point in time in the Arkansas prison system, on any given night, a routine night, there will only be 3 free world people on duty to supervise at Cummins over 900 men, and at Tucker almost 300 men.
So we've gone from Bishop to Merton to Sarver. In those 3 administrations, have the conditions, I mean, are they getting better?
You know, a spotlight has been put on them, but the conditions, you know, it was taking time, governmental type time, to make these changes, and they continued to be dismal, as Jack Holt here describes them.
It was a dark and evil place. The lighting was poor. The ventilation was poor. There wasn't any air conditioning. The overcrowding of the barracks that were built for, say, 70 had 140 in it with double beds stacked up, twin beds, and which was also very convenient for some people if they wanted to creep on others, where they call them that, if they had it in for another inmate, they creep over there with a knife or something, which they had made it down at the barn, taking a file or something, made it out of knife. They had homemade knives around there, and there was quite a few assaults of inmates over inmates. And it was a dark and evil place.
That is Jack Holt. We are talking about the public spotlight that was put onto Arkansas prisons decades ago. We're going to continue this discussion on today's Ozarks Large right after this. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone is Randy Dixon, who is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. We're going through Pryor Center archives that remind us of the conditions of Arkansas prisons in the 1960s, 70s, and moving into the 80s. We're doing this with archives that have been digitized, archives that come from both KATV's archives and some conversations that Randy has had in the past few weeks. Where do we pick up the story?
Well, this is in the middle of these changes that are coming across very slowly. And I came across this sound clip of the chairman of the state prison board at the time. And he was at a civic group, and he was describing improvements, but also described the prisons as a slave camp.
And if he fouls up driving a tractor, why, you just lay him down and beat the bejesus out of him like they did in the old days. Any slave camp can only be efficient with the use of the strap. They didn't build the Egyptian pyramids by offering the slaves an ice cream cone at the end of the day. The Roman galley slaves were not offered little inducements. They beat them. But fellas, we're not running a slave camp. That day is long since passed, and the courts have said that it should not be a slave camp. Our board, 3.5 years ago, outlawed the strap and all other forms of brutality, and we must all understand that you sacrifice efficiency when you try to save human beings. But that's a price that we must pay.
Now, earlier, we've heard from Jack Holt, and earlier you mentioned the person that he would be working with, Philip Kaplan, also a young attorney at the time. What sort of work did they do together toward the conditions of the prison and the developing legal cases?
Well, in building their case to take before Judge Henley, they were given complete access. And going through all these, it kind of surprised me as, you know, a former journalist that they were so open. Let cameras in, and apparently to Judge Holt, they allowed he and Phil Kaplan pretty much the run of whatever they wanted to see and wherever they wanted to go.
Phil Kaplan and I were appointed by Federal Judge Smith Henley. We were given an open door to the organizations with instructions to the penitentiary and its officials that we were to have access to the entire unit at any time and any place under any circumstance and not be prohibited to interview, take pictures of the premises, and the staff was very cooperative in giving us that permission.
We've talked about the Labor Day riot. In 1970, there was a riot, and this one created headlines again, partly because Sarver's taken hostage?
Yes, wow. Yes, and he describes it basically right after he got out.
Their grievances were pretty generally the same grievances that they've had all along, the fact that the system is unconstitutional. They don't feel that we're moving fast enough, I guess, in eliminating the evils that the federal court pointed out. Very little new. Their grievances concerned lack of eating utensils, sanitary facility conditions in the isolation facility, this kind of thing.
Mr. Sarmer, what was the attitude in those meetings? Was it hostile?
It was at first, of course, quite hostile. I sat in a cell, the third cell on the left as you go in. One of the men sat across from me with a pistol. The other one was up on top of the cells with a pistol near the entrance to the unit. We had 5 to 7 men in the cell most of the time as we talked and negotiated. I would say after I'd been there about 2 hours, common sense began to prevail, and at least they understood that we were trying and doing as much as we can with what we've got in the shortest period of time.
Did they, in fact, Mr. Sarver, hold you as hostage at gunpoint?
They did, yes.
What will be the action that the prison will take now toward these men?
I really don't know at this point. We're simply grateful that we got our free world men out alive. That was highly questionable this morning at 3 o'clock, and that we got our trustees out alive. I really don't know. It's something that Mr. Steed and his staff and I will have to give some heavy consideration.
Now, that's the second riot we've talked about. What else can you tell us about this?
Sarver made a lot of changes. One was he eliminated the trustee system, but he also worked on integrating the living quarters of the inmates, and that caused problems. So there was yet another riot. And this is the news coverage of the incident that includes interviews with Sarver and with the state police.
Well, it began, of course, on Friday, I believe, at noon when the men were coming in from the field, from the West Long Line. At that time, there were approximately 100 men involved. Those 100 remained involved for the most part throughout. By the time the eruption came last night, roughly one half our population was involved. Now, most of that half was not directly aggressively involved, but certainly were involved. It largely centered around a small core in each barracks of black militants, a small core of white radicals, each ribbing and agitating the rest of the men in the population. Many of them, of course, didn't want any part of it, but were afraid and just simply through fear went along.
Well, we'll be here all day because we're shaking down the barracks and we're shaking down all of the prisoners so that we've got 50 men actively working here now. And at the end of the day, Mr. Sarver and others and I will confer and decide how much longer we need to stay and in what force.
And so the situation at Cummins, which in the past 2 days has been described equally as highly explosive and one of the worst in history, seems to be quelled, for the moment at least. This is Claude Locke reporting.
And as is often the case in these dire situations, there might be some more money, but probably not as much as was needed to correct years' worth of neglect and abuse. But Sarver does say in this next clip, I believe, that things have gotten better?
Yes, that even with the shortages, he's made improvements in, you know, one of the things was eliminating the trustee system, but he defended the work that he had done.
We've cleaned it up. We've improved the food service appreciably. We're doing the best we can to give every man at least 3 sets of clothes, which is something for us, considering what it used to be. I think, frankly, we've taken over the institution finally, for the most part. It's still state-owned and inmate-operated. It's going to be that way until we get enough staff to handle it.
I mentioned when Mr. Bishop was the director of prisons, it was a thankless job. Merton lasts less than a year, is given a day's notice to get out of state. Not surprising that Sarver is told unceremoniously to leave as well.
Yes, you know, like Merton, he made enemies. And in this interview, he pretty much sees the handwriting on the wall.
Well, I was hired as Commissioner of the Department of Correction by the Board of Correction a little over 2 years ago. To do a specific job here, and I have tried to the very best of my ability to do the job the way I felt it should be done
and the way I felt would be in the best interest not only of the people in the system, but the people of the state of Arkansas. I continue at this point trying to do that job, and I'll keep on doing it. I think it goes without saying that when one approaches his job that way, it's inevitable that he makes enemies.
And now let's bring in a couple of other figures to this prison story that maybe they're not names that you would initially think should be here, but then if you have followed Arkansas history, you go, oh, of course, Winthrop Rockefeller and Johnny Cash.
Yeah, and I just wanted to throw this in because this did happen while Sarver was there, and Sarver came up on stage at one point during the performance, and in 69, Johnny Cash and his wife and his band all came, and I believe the Statler brothers were there. And, you know, this had been popularized by his performances at Folsom Prison and San Quentin. And he came to Cummins, and he had a couple of things to say.
You know, we didn't know too much about Cummins and Tucker until today when we came down, and in the car, we talked to the men that were from the prison here about a lot of the things that go on here. We didn't talk about a lot of other things that go on here, I guess. Sure we didn't. But I learned quite a bit about Cummins Farm. And I learned that there are some people trying to help you fellas. I hope they are. They say they are, and it looks like they really are. I know our governor's trying to help you.
Let's sum this up. What do we know about the case? Because the prison system's ruled unconstitutional.
You know, improvements were made. They did deal with a lot of the corruption. And one of the last things I asked Judge Holt, you know, it's been 50-plus years since he was involved with the case. And, he's kept up with the prison system mm-hmm. over the years. But I just asked him, you know, what he thought of the outcome of the case today.
Well, I think the significance of it was that it caused a complete change of the operation of the penitentiary, from health care to facilities to food service and to actually improved the premises, too. The living conditions were, I would say, not satisfactory.
Well, okay. I know that usually when you and I talk, you're not quite sure what will be coming next, but I look forward to it.
Maybe something fun. How's that?
We've done crime, prison. Maybe so. But I'll leave that up to you because they're always interesting. You can find out so much more if you put Pryor Center into a search engine. It's the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy Dixon, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing these with us.
Had a great time. See you next week.